Shirley Chisholm shattered the glass ceiling in 1968 when she became the first black woman elected to Congress. Chisholm famously said, "If they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair." It turns out, decades later, that's still easier said than done for many women of color. It's why our next guest wrote a how-to book of sorts. It's called The Memo, What Women of Color Need to Know to Secure a Seat at the Table. Minda Hartz, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you, Tanya. Happy to be here.
So at the beginning of your book, you give the reasoning for why you wrote this book specifically for women of color. You say, like many women, like myself, you went out and bought Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, which, for those who don't know, is kind of the holy grail for women's empowerment and how to get a seat at the table. But when you were done, you were disappointed. What was missing for you?
Yeah, I was disappointed because so many women, I put that in quotations, were excited about this book, but I didn't see myself as a black woman or a woman of color in the book. I felt that it's hard to lean in when you're not even in the room, and I don't think you address some of those issues that some of us face. Everyone doesn't experience the workplace the same.
And what are some of those issues?
One of the issues that I felt was missing was race. I think it's hard to talk about a seat at the table when you don't acknowledge that not all ceilings are created equal. We have the wage gap for black and brown women is much different than Caucasian women. And I think that, you know, Sheryl wrote from a place of privilege. Now, I don't take it away that that is her story. That is what she drew from. But I think that there are many nuances to the table. And I felt like it was time for black and brown women to finally be able to shake their head up and down and read some of the common themes that we experience when we try to lean in.
In talking a little bit about that disparity, you mentioned leadership roles in Fortune 500 companies and board positions specifically. 28% of women hold board positions for Fortune 500 companies, but that number is much lower in the single digits for black and brown women. You also talk a bit about the labels and the stereotypes and how they come into play when you are in corporate situations. So, for instance, the angry black woman, the feisty Latina, the docile Asian, and how that comes into play in your interactions when you're dealing with coworkers and colleagues. Do you have a specific story that stands out for you?
One of the women that I spoke with while writing the book, she told me that her white male boss could never remember her name and made her wear a name tag. And she was there for 7 years. And when she went to speak on about it, they told her, "Don't be the angry black woman." And it's like, well, how are you supposed to feel working somewhere for 7 years and you're always getting my name wrong? You know, so it's things like that, that we don't even have the agency to speak out on at times.
You often talk a lot in the book about microaggressions. I once had a boss who kept calling me Detroit Tanya. That's where I'm from originally. But he kept saying, "I want to see Detroit Tanya, not this polished Tanya that I see." And I sort of felt that that was a microaggression of sorts, because what he was seeing is actually Tanya. And you had a story similar to that with the nail polish thing when you were working in corporate America and someone mentioned the colors that you were wearing.
Yes, absolutely. Microaggressions and bias are real. And when I was in corporate America, my manager commented on my nail color, which at the time it was summertime, and so I had on the color burnt orange, and he said, "You people love your bright colors." And he joked with another white male colleague for about 15 minutes about how black people like bright colors.
Yeah. The numbers, the statistics are out there on the percentages of women who are in leadership positions. And in talking about the wage disparity, black women in the United States, on average, are paid about 61 cents for every dollar paid to white non-Hispanic men. This book, though, is a how-to book on ways that women can get a seat to the table. So let's start talking a little bit about your tips. You say that, number one, you should build your squad both internally and externally. Talk a little bit about what that is and why that's important.
Yes, we talk a lot about networking. I think it's so important and crucial for women of color if we want the seat at the table. And I realize not everybody wants that. And that's okay too. And so figuring out, do you want to secure your seat? And that will require you to build what some may see as allyship, build relationships with key stakeholders in the organization and your colleagues that you work with side by side, but having people who can speak on your behalf when you're not in the room. And for me in particular, it was building that squad that team inside the workplace that helped me secure my seat at the table.
Mm. And you also talk about really getting to know your colleagues and your coworkers. It's something that we often think, okay, you're playing a game, but this game is important because you find your other colleagues are also doing this.
Absolutely. You know, I hate that the game is still in motion, right? This like imaginary game of life that we're all playing inside the workplace, but there are some things to do and navigate to get that seat, and then we can bring others along with us so that we don't have to experience the isolation. But I found when I built my squad inside the workplace that I had many more opportunities to thrive and not just survive.
Yeah, and building your team and also playing that game, that means after work, taking the time to go out for drinks or for golf, as we always use that as an example, getting to know your coworkers and colleagues in their personal lives and opening yourself up to allow them to get to know you as well.
Yes, because I think, at least for me, when I entered the workplace, we were told, just do your job and put your head down, right? So we didn't go to the after work activities. We didn't maybe go to the break room when the birthdays were happening. And I think two things happen. People get to see us in a different way, but then we also get to observe those who could be potential squad members, because not everybody at work is your friend and wants to see you win. And so you may not always know that about them, just passing them casually on the way to get coffee.
What are some other ways that white allies within the workplace can help, can be a part of producing that culture? Maybe they are not even in leadership positions, but they may be your coworkers and your colleagues.
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that I talk about was an experience that I was going through of being one of the only Black women in the workplace. And when the situation was happening, the situation caused for me to be an advocate for myself, but then my white coworkers just watched it all go down, and in secrecy, they would come and see if I was okay and say, sorry, you're going through this. But when they had the opportunities to speak up about it in public, they did not stand up for me. And I think that if you're a colleague of any color or gender, I think it's important to be there in public and also educating yourself and using books like The Memo to see what you've been doing, how have you been contributing to some of the discomfort that women of color have been experiencing in the workplace? And I think it requires that education piece to truly be an ally.
In combating all of this with imposter syndrome, we hear a lot about this, but it's a real thing. And not every person of color, not every woman of color, not every woman has imposter syndrome, but it is a real thing. How do you combat it? How do you recommend others combat it?
Yeah, you're right. Not everybody experiences that. And for me, I had a lot of imposter syndrome that I was dealing with. And I was just grateful to be in the room or at the table or being thought of for things. So I just didn't see my worth. And so I talk about having an empire state of mind versus an enemy state of mind. And an empire state of mind is that I can do anything. If I can make it here, I can make it anywhere. But that enemy state of mind is steadily kind of just the self-deprecating mode that sometimes we get into. And that is half the reason. Like, yes, there's these external factors in the workplace that may prevent us from moving forward, but some of that is also embedded in who we see and who we want to be in the workplace. So I think it's important that we do that internal work to build from that.
Having a seat at the table is not only important for self-fulfillment, self-success, but studies have shown that it's also good for organizations in general. It helps organizations perform better. Talk a little bit about what you found regarding diversity in general, how it actually is a benefit to have more women of color at the table.
Right. So as you mentioned, there's so many statistics as to the benefit to the bottom line. And so I think the next phase of the conversation is the activation. You know, are we going to accelerate those who have been left out of the corner office? And I think it's really important for us to be a part of the conversation. And I think we're just at a very much a rhetoric phase of leadership, but the future of work will require the advancement of women of color.
There's also this other thing that we see. Many managers who are really on board with creating a more inclusive workspace, they're doing active work to hire women of color. But if you look at their organizational chart, all of the people of color, for instance, may be in entry-level or lower-level positions. How do you break through that? What message would you have for them? And what message do you have for folks who are working in those spaces, women of color, when they're looking around and they're seeing that there is an effort, but there is a ceiling at the same time?
That's a great question. And I feel as Black and brown women, sometimes there's what we call a black ceiling. And what I found and what statistics have shown is black women, we ascend to a certain point and then it tends to be middle management. And that's as far as many of us get. And I think that it goes back to two things, being either a cautious leader or a courageous leader. And I think cautious leaders will retain and advance women of color because it's important to be reflective of your mission and your values. So if you say that diversity matters, but no one in leadership looks like some of your workforce, then that signals to those women of color that you're not being intentional. And I think that people often say it's a pipeline issue, but it's really a retaining and advancing issue. And I think for women of color, oftentimes we have to also adhere to our expiration dates. Maybe we're at a company where we're never going to get to that table because of cautious leaders. And so don't be afraid to find a table that's right for you.
Minda Hartz, the author of The Memo, What Women of Color Need to Know to Secure a Seat at the Table. Thank you for joining us, Minda.
Thank you.
For more information on The Memo, go to hereandnow.org.